Ryan, what's happening, buddy? How are you?
Not much. How are you guys today?
We're doing really well. And, you know, you wrote a good article and had a great conversation with Judd Brackett, Canucks head scout on The Athletic. And I really enjoyed the conversation you had with him. What was your biggest takeaway in terms of how they evaluate players ahead of the draft?
Yeah, absolutely. With those kind of things, it's obviously hard because, you know, they don't want to give away too much information on the way the processes are done, but you're still kind of, you know, trying to figure out how they've adapted. But the biggest takeaway is that I think that, you know, the lines of communications and, you know, the fact that they are, you know, constantly trying to find out information and trying to get better is something that stood out to me. I think obviously you know that they're not just going to sit on their laurels and accept being good or do well and then pat themselves on the back. But I think that, you know, the takeaway from the conversation for myself is that they, you know, even if they make mistakes, is how did we make that mistake? How did we, you know, where did this player fail? How do we get better? What can we do better in the future? And I think that that's a refreshing thing to hear, and definitely something that kind of gets the wheels turning, because I think a lot of the time, you know, people in the, you know, the analytic community or, you know, the outside public sphere of scouts, they always focus on the positives of things. And I think that, you know, maybe how this evolves further is how do we look at the players that failed? Why did these players fail? And I think that, you know, Judd shed some good light and some good information into that.
And when you look at how they've learned, did you see, I mean, maybe he wasn't going to go into the process of telling you they made mistakes in 2016 or 2015 or whatever the case is, but did you get the sense that they've learned from some of the past picks and how to evaluate talent and they're taking a step forward and keep evolving in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that they've, you know, you mentioned that they've incorporated data more and they, you know, it's about making the best educated decision at all times. And they have, you know, the guys with their analytics team that have started to assist with them further, and it's about meshing that information. And I think that, you know, I think that's part of the, you know, learning from mistakes. And maybe that, you know, if you had like a player based on the eye test, maybe the data doesn't line up with that and you have to recheck yourself and refigure things out. And I think that you're absolutely right. They're not going to say, oh, we messed up on player X or Y, but I think that, you know, we've talked a few times over the year or so that, you know, there seems to be a shift in the way that they're evaluating players, whether that's the, you know, even looking at someone like Tony Uttinen, is that maybe he isn't a, you know, a super flashy player, but he does all the things that, you know, may stand out in the new NHL. His underlying data is good. You know, if you look at his comparables in history, it's a lot more encouraging than taking some big bruising CHL defenseman because you're trying to add some grit on the back end.
Ryan, as this team goes forward in its development and as they get more competitive every, hopefully every year from this point onwards, do you think there's going to be a philosophical change in how they approach the draft where they might try to find more NHL-ready guys in the first round as opposed to maybe going for the upside so that they have a bigger impact on the roster sooner rather than later as the team might be closer to contending in 3 to 4 or 5 years or so, or however long it might take?
No, I don't think so, to be honest with you, because I think that the overriding message within the group from speaking with Judd and then speaking with others at other times is that I think that it's so hard to predict how players are going to be. And, you know, if you want to look at something like Elias Pettersson, is that I think that that was a big shift in the way that the scouting team evaluated players, that shifting away from players that might be more NHL ready and go for the high-end upside, and maybe they do take a bit longer. And guess what? Elias Pettersson was in the NHL faster than a lot of his peers in that same group. So I think that, yeah, there is that tendency or maybe that thought that that's what they have to do. But I think that they've shown the track record so far that if you're going just for the high-end players, that those players will figure it out and overcome their weaknesses. And then they may actually just hit the same timeline as going for a guy who you think will be more NHL-ready.
Ryan, a lot of conversation over the past couple of days about trading, the possibility of trading a guy like Alex Edler from this roster right now. Would we have this conversation still if Olli Juolevi was still healthy and playing for Utica, or would it have just been impossible to avoid simply because of the fact that maybe the Canucks still do need to have him on the roster, even if Juolevi had still been playing this whole point?
Yeah, I don't think it would actually kind of stop them from exploring this option, because let's say, you know, hypothetically, if Olli Juolevi was healthy and ready to go right now, he may only get a handful of games down the season, but he would still be playing the majority of the season in the AHL. In the next year, you know, I think we're all expecting Hughes to be in the lineup at some degree. I think that then if you're expecting Juolevi to also make that leap, then suddenly you have a really green left side, you know, with those two. And then are you going to go with those two and someone like Ben Hutton or Troy Stetcher, or are you going to go with a more, you know, stable defenseman like Alex Edler? So, you know, I might not necessarily agree with the path in re-signing Edler, but I think it's a defensible stance and wanting to have some sort of veteran defenseman on that side to help eat up more minutes when those younger players may inevitably go through those troubles. And there is that comfort factor with Edler that, you know, he has been a good soldier for the team. You know, he's played his entire career here. He loves it here. He's willing to do it. And I think he'd be a good example for those other two of, you know, what it takes to be an NHL player and what to be an impact NHL player.
You know, the other part about that too, Ryan, is when we look at how Edler is playing, the role he has both on the PP, on the PK, and as many minutes he plays at even strength, sure, they have people like Quinn Hughes who can step in and play on this team, but is there anybody on this team right now, whether it's a veteran or a young guy coming up, who can take on that role specifically?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think that the goal is hopefully that OU Levy will be that guy to do all the same situations as Edler, and then Hughes would be more the power play kind of guy. But I don't think that at this point there's anyone that they could step in. So then they'd have to go shopping for someone to get, you know, to fill that role anyways. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, in an ideal situation, if they do re-sign Edler, then maybe Edler is taking off the first power play unit and that's Hughes' spot to take, but he's still taking those penalty kill minutes, and then maybe Yule Levy starts taking away those kind of things. So I think that's kind of the long-term plan in if they do go down that path.
Yeah, and I wonder if they do keep Edler, if that makes somebody else on that blue line expendable, whether it's a Ben Hutton, whether it's an Eric Goodbranson. But that's a different conversation for a different day. But as we look at the draft coming up in 2019, and I look forward to talking more about this as we get closer to the draft, Ryan, and you are our resident Sportsnet 650 prospect analyst. Now, when it comes to the defensemen in this year's draft, and I'm just looking at Sam Constantino's latest list for the January rankings, Bowen Byram's the only defenseman that's being viewed as a top 10 talent. And we know normally as we get closer to the draft, defensemen will rise up. But let's say, for argument's sake, the Canucks are picking 10th, for example. Could we be in a situation where even though they're picking 10th, they could have their pick of the defenseman at that stage?
Yeah, I think so. And I definitely agree with that, is I think Bowen Byram is the top defenseman in this draft class. And I think there is a noticeable gap between him and the next group. And I think that at that point, there's also a matter of preference. I would probably like, you know, I probably like different defensemen than someone like Constantino likes or whoever else. And then it's a matter of where is the line when you're going to be passing up too much talent on the forward ranks to then fix the, fix the gap within the prospect system. So, you know, let's say arguably they're sitting at 10th. I might make the argument that that's probably still reaching for a defenseman. If we're now talking 15th, 16th, they somehow squeeze themselves into a playoffs. Then I think you're in that range where it's more justifiable to take a defenseman. And whether that's, Thomas Harley with the great franchise, the Mississauga Steelheads, who I'm working with there. I think that he's a good one. You have Cam York, Anton Honka, who everyone saw at the World Juniors, Matthew Robertson or Victor Soderstrom. Again, it's a matter of preference for those defensemen, but I think that that's kind of the range where you're going at. If we're sitting at 10th, I think there's going to be some really, really interesting players available in terms of forwards, and we're talking in the group of, you know, maybe there's the Ryan Suzuki or the Raphael Lavoie, Nicholas Robertson, or a big fan of who I'm, Trevor Zegras with the USNDTP. Those are kind of the guys that will be in that range as well that I think that are a little bit more justifiable at 10th overall.
Talking the 2019 draft here with Ryan Beach on Sportsnet 650. And Ryan, just staying with the defenseman for a minute, if the Canucks are somewhere around 10, notice that in the first round, according to some of these lists, there's a lot of left-hand shot defensemen. Is that going to play a problem for the Canucks, who have most of their prospects on the left side already, like Quinn Hughes, Ylevi, Jack Rathbone, Griesbaugh? These guys are all lefties. Does it complicate things at all, or do you just take that player and assume things will sort of solve itself over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think that, and Judd kind of touched on it briefly in the Q&A there for The Athletic, is that, you know, at some point you do have to kind of look at a need within your system and maybe you adjust that. And I think that, you know, Jet Wu might be an example of that, is that obviously the Canucks had a, you know, a gap in their prospect system on the right side, and Jet Wu was there in that spot. So, you know, it might have pushed him ahead by a couple spots, and thus they took him. But I think that no matter what, with your first round pick, you need to take the best player available. Yes, unfortunately, this draft class is a lot of left-handed defenders and a lot of, you know, wingers and centers and things like that. And you might just ultimately have to take the guy and then wait for him to develop. And if you have a glut of riches in a few years, then maybe you move them for a right-handed defenseman or a forward in that sense. So I think that, you know, it might be just a matter of overthinking it, because the fact that you want to make sure that you're continuing to just add as much talent as possible.
How interested are you in a guy like Kirby Dach, who's so big, and probably is still going to grow a little bit, or at least fill into his frame a bit more as he starts to get a little older and matures. And he's got the skill set to maybe be a top five prospect this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think he's a top five prospect for me. I think him and Dylan Cousins have separated themselves from the rest of the group. I think that, you know, Doc is kind of a really good hybrid of being a gritty forward, but a super skilled guy who can make plays, score goals, make passes, all these things. So I think that he's kind of set himself apart as being in that third tier, because I definitely view it as being Jack Hughes is alone in the top, Kakko is number two, and then the third tier from there. So, you know, Kirby Doc is a really interesting player. I'm excited to see what he's going to do in the second half of the season, but I think he's a player that was just a coach's dream, because you can put him in any situation and I think he can be effective and make everyone better around him.
Yeah, and one player I like a lot, maybe is outside of that tier for you, the top five, is Matthew Boldy. And I mean, you're talking about a kid who has so much talent and he's getting stronger and bigger as well. I mean, can you see him either rising or coming down in this draft? Like, where do you view him and his ability to maybe rise up from this point on?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think he's kind of in that group as well. I'd probably say a little bit below the two WHL forwards I mentioned, but I think that he's been playing extremely well for the USNDTP. I do view him as more of being a shot, you know, he has a really good shot to his game, but I think that might be the circumstance just because of how loaded the team is and how the team is breaking, you know, breaks down. I really like his ability to create plays as well. So it's funny that, you know, we're talking about these kids, that they have so much filling out to do, and that's such a huge part of, you know, projecting where they're going to be 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
Yeah, and before we let you go too, Ryan, I did want to ask you a little bit about the Comets. And as much time we've spent about talking about the forwards who have a hard time getting to the roster because of all the players that are there and so on and so forth, considering the fact that Ulevi got hurt, Jalen Chatfield's been hurt, Sautner's had injury problems too, and I know Guillaume Brisebois's been in and out, is one of the underlying maybe negative storylines the fact that defense has had a hard time seeing players grow this season? Are we seeing enough growth from the defensemen this year, whether it's due to injury or just lack of progress?
Yeah, I think so. It's been kind of a, for lack of a better word, a bit of a mess on the back end there, because, you know, Ulevi goes down, Chatfield's been gone for so much, and they've been inserting a lot of PTOs, and it just seems to never be able to be quite stable back there. It's constantly rotating between the guys and constantly switching sides and in and out of the lineup, so that can be really hard to come to a conclusion. But I think that Brisebois in particular has, you know, taken a good step forward in terms of his development. You know, last year at this point you could definitely tell he was a rookie player, but he took obvious strides into being more comfortable in the A, and I think that so far this year he has been leaned on quite heavily and he's taken that role pretty well. Obviously we'd like to see a little bit more offensive output from him in terms of, you know, how do we project him into the NHL, but I think that he's been, you know, he's been a good stabilizing force on the back end, and he's been displaying the ability to continue to do what he's been doing, which is, you know, move the puck out well, you know, skate it out and jump into the rush, and hopefully those things will lead to him getting more points. In particular, I think he's been a lot better in the corners in terms of, you know, getting gritty, for lack of a better word, on forecheckers and things like that. The other two, you know, the kind of two that you would say that might have a chance of getting a cup of tea is Evan McEnany, which I think is a player that a lot of people have forgotten about because mm-hmm. he was injured last year. I think he's played pretty well, and I think he's at least put himself back in the conversation as being a depth option going forward, maybe being that 8-9 guy who comes up with injuries. And Sautner's played pretty well as well. Same kind of thing. I think both of them have asserted themselves as being that, you know, possibility going forward. So, you know, it's been tough. I think the whole year and whole team of Utica has been really tough to evaluate. There's obviously that conversation and that was brought up again with Paul Moose's comments and Ryan Johnson's comments here on 650 is that it's never black and white. It's always gray. There's always that middle ground. Is it? Yeah, maybe the player felt that they weren't being spoken to or they weren't giving an opportunity, but they also didn't seize the opportunity. And how do we, you know, how do they get better as a group to, you know, ensure that that doesn't happen in the future? So, it's been definitely tough. That's the best way I can describe it.
Well, I mean, we'd all like to see guys like Lind and Gadjevich play more, right? But, you know, we can have a conversation about whether they should get more ice time, whether that helps them more or tutelage is more important. But the fact, too, here is neither player, Lind nor Gadjevich, look particularly ready to take a big step this season. Like, they look like guys that need a lot of work, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I'm pretty sure we could go on for another half an hour about this conversation is that, yeah. So, you know, the group of those two and Jasik and Dahlin, you know, we're kind of starting the season rotating in and out of the lineup or rotating in the lower spots and moving up from there. And I would arguably say that Jasik and Dahlin seized the moment a little bit more, and have definitely played more and been rewarded with more play, and the other two had kind of struggled to make the adjustment. Unfortunately, Lynn got injured and had been out for a while, and that kind of set him back. But I think he's been playing, you know, pretty well over the last handful of games and getting a lot more chances and getting back to what set him apart in the WHL. And now it's a matter of continuing to do so, and then hopefully the coaching staff rewards him with more ice time. As for Gajewicz, I think that, you know, his flaw to his game was always going to be his skating, and how is he going to overcome that? And he showed signs of it being, you know, overcoming it in the O last year, but he had such a devil of a time staying healthy that I think it was almost a lost year. So now coming to the O, that flaw is definitely standing out, and how do you get above that? So, like I said, we could spend half an hour talking about the different ways of doing it and saying that, you know, it depends how they do it. And obviously a lot of people have an opinion on how it should be done.
Sportsnet 650.